everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Oi with the Terror. I'm one of your hosts, Sandra.
And I'm your other host, Danielle.
And we are back. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. Happy first day of spring. Hopefully the weather will get slightly better. Stay better.
I didn't know today was the first day of spring.
I think it's today. Crap, it might not be till Thursday.
Our daffodils just started opening, so that's timely.
Because I heard today was the first day of spring, but that might not be until the 21st. Hold on. Checking it. Nope, today. Today is the first day of spring.
Okay. It definitely feels more spring-like.
Because 2024 is a leap year, so that is why it is today. It's usually around, like, March 20th, 21st, but it's today. So happy spring, cool. Everybody.
Now I feel like I need a garden.
Well, you do kind of have a garden. Aren't you
guys
growing?
We have daffodils. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it so far. We have some shrubs, but I want to plant more stuff in our backyard. And I know in the spring you're supposed to do something. The spring and the fall are the seasons where you do gardening stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents are visiting this weekend, so I'll just, like, ask them advice.
Well, at least your dad's not helping you guys put in a fence this time, so...
Mm-hmm. Even my grandma helped.
Oh, wow.
So it was like a family endeavor.
Family event.
Yeah, like how the Amish do it with houses, but they did it with the fence.
Yeah.
And we like had a fence party.
Well, I guess that's an easy way to like save money and time is just to have your family help out. So,
yeah, I recommend it.
Yeah. I mean, we all do it. I don't even have a house and I'm still I'm like, hey dad, can you like next time you come up, like can you help me with this?
Yeah, I mean he has all the electrician knowledge, so that's pretty handy.
Yeah, but every time he's in my apartment, it's always like he's gonna say something about how it's not up to code because Boston apartments, they don't believe in that. So all right, I guess I will go first. So the story I picked for this week, to kind of keep in the theme of, I guess, like, not really leap year, but, like, St. Patrick's Day in Ireland, is I picked, and excuse my pronunciation, because I know I'm going to butcher these names. So I don't know, Daniel, if you've heard of it, but the story of the tragic lovers of Dermond and Grenay.
Does not sound familiar.
Does not sound familiar. Okay. Have you seen the movie Leap Year?
Yes.
It is mentioned in Leap Year.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, or I'll see if you can guess the scene. I don't know. I don't know when the last time was that you watched Leap Year. I watched it kind of recently. So, but I'll tell you at the end which scene it's featured in, because I had to like triple check that because the story sounded really familiar. And again, excuse my pronunciation of the names. So essentially this story is one of the more romantic legends of Ireland, and it is very similar to the legends of King Arthur with the romance between his wife Guinevere and Sir Lancelot. So Grenay was essentially known as the most beautiful woman in Ireland. She was also the daughter of Cormac MacArt, who at the time was the High King of Ireland, and she was being courted by many of Ireland's most eligible princes and chieftains. Including the very much aging Fionn MacCool, who at the time wanted the young maiden to be his second wife. So he went and he asked her to marry him, and she agreed. And then there was a great feast that was set up to celebrate the newly engaged couple. But on that night, she met Dermond, who was one of Fionn's best warriors. And for them, it was love at first sight. She essentially was prepared to go at any lengths to get her man, so she decided to drug the entire party, apart from Dermond, and then they confessed their love to each other, but in the end, they eventually decided to run off together, even though at the time, he kind of wanted to back off as he was loyal to his leader, and it wouldn't exactly look very good for him to run off with his leader's fiancé. So the two decided to run off together, and they were hotly pursued by a very angry Fionn and all of his men. They essentially ran across all of Ireland, and They hid in caves. They hid in behind the trees and all kinds of nooks and crannies, under and inside of which the local legend has it that Diarmaid and Grenay essentially laid together. And after long years on the run, she fell pregnant with his child. But unfortunately, fate was about to catch up with them, because one day out of the wilderness, with Fionn and his men still chasing them, he and Grenay came across the hearth of Belbunnan, which is in Coast Ligo, where there was a giant boar that confronted them. This essentially was bad news for Diarmaid, because legend has it that the only living creature that could harm him was a wild boar. And as the boar charged, Diarmaid was protecting his heavily pregnant wife. He wrestled the boar to the ground in a fight to the death. The warrior did kill the boar with his sword, but that wasn't before the boar had gored him and fatally wounding him. As Fionn and his men came upon the long-sought battle, he found Diarmaid dying in a heavily pregnant Grenier's arms, and she begged him to essentially save her lover. She implored Fionn to show mercy and save his former friend by curing Diarmaid with a drink of water cupped by his magical hands, but he refused because he was still hurt that they had eloped and left him. So with Diarmaid dying, Fionn's men begged him to help save this once great warrior to live, but he still refused. It was only when his son Oisin challenged his father and threatened to kill him that Fionn agreed to help Diarmaid, but it was unfortunately too late before Fionn had gotten the water and Diarmaid had died. So Fionn MacCool was also known as Fionn MacCumhail, and he was the same giant who was credited to building the Giant's Causeway, which is a very big landmark in Northern Ireland. The story of Diarmaid and Grenay has left a very big mark on Irish folklore. It has been passed through generations, and it kind of evolves each with retelling. The different versions that I was looking at, it depended on which version I was looking at, because they were all kind of slightly different. It also has been featured in modern literature and has been adapted and reimagined into contemporary literature. Notable examples of this include The Pursuit of Diarmaid and Grenay by Standish O'Grady, which offers a prose of retelling of the tale of the legend of Diarmaid and Grenay by James Stephen's Irish Fairy Tales. And the story has also been interpreted in modern Irish poetry, such as Grenay's Speech to Diarmaid by Nuala Ní Dhúmhail. It's also been featured in popular culture as well. It's been featured in comic books and video games and television series. And one of the most notable is that it has been featured in Leap Year as well. And the interesting thing about the legend is every single version that I read, it essentially cut off when he died, and because Fionn didn't help them. So I couldn't actually find out what happened to her. So I'm not sure what happened. I did try to look and I couldn't find out what happened to her. But that is kind of one of Ireland's most famous romantic / really sad tales.
Yeah, I've never heard of that, I don't think.
So if you go and you watch Leap Year, there's a scene. And for those of you that don't know, Leap Year stars Amy Adams, and she's essentially going to Ireland to propose to her boyfriend, who is dragging his feet. So when she gets there, she's having all these issues trying to get to Dublin. She ends up meeting this other guy who tries to help her get to Dublin. And it's a very good movie. But it's the scene where they're waiting for the train and they're walking up and they're trying to kill time. And he's like, you know, there's a castle up there. And she's like, okay, but I'm still waiting for this train. And he kind of like convinces her to go and look at the castle. And as they're walking up the castle, he's explaining the story. And I think he kind of changes it a little bit. The other thing about that I kind of just remembered. So there's also, I don't remember what exactly they're called, but the nooks and crannies that they like hid in, a lot of legends are around those as well. And the locals will say stuff about those particular nooks and crannies, or they'll say that particular nooks and crannies that they live near are one of the ones that those two hid in or used for protection while they were trying to run away. So there's a lot of different kind of legends with that as well. But I just thought the story was kind of interesting. I've only heard of it because of Leap Year. I haven't heard of it for anything else. And I thought it was interesting that people connected to Lancelot and Guinevere.
And they were for sure real people, right? Because yes. It says that her father, she was the daughter of a king. Mm.
That's the other thing too, is they were definitely real people. So it's not like they're, you know, fairies or other folklore. So I thought, I don't know, I just thought the story was really interesting. I liked that it was kind of connected because Ireland and St. Patrick's Day. So I was trying to find something, but I realized that I'd already done a lot with St. Patrick's Day. Like, I've done all of, like, the popular ones. But I thought people would kind of appreciate this one because it's a little different.
If only we had photos of what they looked like. I'm always curious about that.
Especially in Fionn, because he was described as, like, very old, like, old enough to be, like, her grandfather.
Oh.
Which is, like, you know.
And to be called the most beautiful woman in Ireland, I mean.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting because it's kind of similar.
It's pretty high praise.
Well, it's also similar to, like, Troy and how, like, Helena was, like, the most beautiful woman. You know, it's, like, that whole thing. And, again, she's promised to this guy, and then she runs off with this other guy. And so it's kind of like that, too, a little bit. So.
Yeah, there's something about that that's always, like, fascinating. Like, kind of, because it seems like kind of a modern sentiment for, like, a woman to take control of her own destiny, even when she has all these obligations to do otherwise. And, like, when it happened that long ago, it's just, like, fascinating.
Yeah, and this also made me want to, at some other point, do more about Fionn MacCool, since he's connected to the Giant's Causeway, which I've been to, but I didn't realize there was a huge legend. Like, I kind of forgot, because it's been so long, that there is a huge legend behind that as well. So I'll probably look into that a little bit later on. So stay tuned.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, fun Irish folklore-y stuff. I wasn't sure if it was going to end with a, and then this couple haunts everyone in some,
I mean,
just imagine them as ghosts haunting people.
I mean, that is kind of normal, especially since in most versions that I read, like, she drugged all of the men before, so they could leave, which is like, well, that's ballsy.
Like something out of Game of Thrones, like, and then the him getting killed, like, by a boar thing.
The only thing that can kill him is a boar, and he happens to get killed by a boar. It's like, oh, okay.
Right.
But yeah, I'm kind of annoyed because, like, I couldn't find out what happened to them. Like, it didn't say in any of the websites I looked at. So if anybody knows, please let us know.
Maybe they're happy for a little bit.
I hope so.
Hopefully. Topic is different. There isn't really a romantic love story. It's a bunch of, like, weird, sketchy people. There is, like, romance aspects of it, but that's definitely not the main focus. So I actually was inspired by the book you recently gave me, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. I started reading it. I haven't gone very far, but it definitely seems like one that's, like, really easy to read. Like, you don't want to, like, just, like, finish it in, like, a week if you wanted type. But it's the book, Sandra gave it to me for my birthday, and it's basically about, like, a classic Hollywood starlet from, I guess, mainly, like, the 50s, 60s, it seemed like was kind of her heyday. And she got married to a bunch of guys, and the book takes place, like, in present time, but switches back to past times. And in present times, there's a journalist, like, writing about her life, because she's just, like, a fascinating, kind of, like, scandalous type of persona, I guess. And when I started reading it, she reminded me of like some real life classic Hollywood actresses. I watched a lot of TCM growing up, so I was just like imagining like actresses from like I kept thinking back earlier than the 50s for some reason, based on how she was described. I was thinking more like kind of like 30s, mm-hmm. 40s actresses, like one in particular Rita Hayworth, mm-hmm. came to mind. But she was only married 5 times. But like the description of Evelyn Hugo, how she was basically like a like bombshell, like femme fatale type personality, and but for whatever reason, like had like maybe not failed relationships, but just couldn't really, due to circumstances perhaps out of her control, couldn't like, I don't know, have that one guy that understood her or whatever. And Rita Hayworth had a similar story, and they both had like Cuban/Spanish like ancestries, but had to change their personas to like their names and backgrounds in order to fit more into the mm-hmm. Hollywood thing, which I find fascinating. Like, it was just normal for people to change their names, and like if they had any like blemishes on their families or things that might not have sounded good to promote the actors back then, like film studio heads just made them change so much of their lives. And this happened to so many real actors, like it's crazy. So it made me think of this case I had heard a few years ago, a Hollywood starlet, Thelma Todd, who was mysteriously murdered. And it's still like unsolved to this day. And there are so many strange occurrences and shady characters that it literally sounds like a movie that could have come out at that time, like a film noir detective type movie. Like, there were so many good detective movies back in the day. And like, I'm sure they just grabbed stories from real life situations or like newspapers, things that were going on. If anyone's interested in Rita Hayworth, the movie I like of hers is called Gilda. That's kind of like what she was known for. So Thelma Todd was basically a rising star, but I think I saw that she was in over 100 movies. They were also churning out movies at a crazy pace back then. So Thelma Todd was found dead in 1935. Her death was ruled a suicide, but for many reasons, people think that she was actually murdered. Thelma Todd was a well-known fixture in films during the 20s and 30s. Today, her death continues to be a fixture in Hollywood lore. She was known as the ice cream blonde. And if you look up photos of her, basically she looked like pre-Marilyn Monroe, like that kind of blonde peroxide type hair, like the short coiffed, super platinum blonde. But Marilyn Monroe came after her, so it's kind of interesting, like if Thelma Todd had stayed alive and kept gaining in popularity, like maybe there wouldn't have been a Marilyn Monroe, or maybe it would have changed things, who knows. So Thelma Todd was popular for her comedic roles, specifically in a few Marx Brothers films called Horse Feathers and Monkey Business. Thelma Alice Todd was born in Lawrence, Massachusetts on July 29th, 1906. She was known for her bright, cheery demeanor and for her determination. After she graduated from high school in 1923, she enrolled in Lowell Normal College. She had initially gone to school for teaching, but her mother convinced her to enter beauty pageants and acting contests. Thelma was both beautiful and charming, which proved to be valuable assets. She did well and eventually won the title of Miss Massachusetts. She attracted the attention of some of Hollywood's top scouts, and they gave her advice and told her she should attend the Paramount School of Junior Stars, run by Paramount Studios. This was a pivotal moment for Thelma, and she switched gears from studying to become a teacher to starting her film career. She started with silent films and then moved on to talkies. She was known for her comedic skills and her beauty. But by the time she died at her young age, she had actually appeared in more than 100 feature movies and shorts. And it's undeniable that she would have gone on to star in many more films if her life had not been cut short. In addition to being a rising star, she was also a savvy businesswoman and opened a restaurant in Malibu called Thelma Todd's Sidewalk Cafe. It rapidly turned into a hangout for celebrities and tourists, but it also attracted some shady customers, including mobsters. Her restaurant would prove to be an important location and a piece in the puzzle of Thelma's mysterious death. Thelma was found dead inside her car by her maid, May Whitehead, on December 16, 1935. Her car was parked inside the garage of Roland West, who was Thelma's business partner as well as casual love interest. So, quote from May Whitehead, quote, "She was slumped in the front seat of her car, just bent over her head to the left," she told detectives, and she also noticed some blood around Thelma's nose. The official cause of death was listed as carbon monoxide poisoning, but this was disputed by many. When investigators started looking into the starlet's life, they uncovered enough strange details about her family, friends, and associates, which raised some red flags and gave detectives potential motives for Thelma's murder. Within the three months of investigating, two men were arrested in New York in connection with extortion notes and telephone calls received by Miss Todd demanding $10,000 under penalty of death, but there were no signs of violence at the scene of her death, so I guess this made investigators confused. Lists of suspects started forming, one being Thelma's love interest, Roland West. West was a film director, but at that time his career had slowed down after his initial success. Thelma Todd's Sidewalk Cafe was popular with the elite of Hollywood, but it turned out to not be a very lucrative business endeavor. To complicate matters further, Thelma and Roland actually lived together in a duplex above the restaurant, along with Roland's estranged wife, Jewel Carmen. And I repeat, her name was Jewel Carmen.
That's interesting.
Yes, apparently the three of them lived in a duplex. So, a little unconventional. But it doesn't, from what I read, it didn't sound like there was like a throuple situation going on. It sounded like apparently Jewel was respectful of Thelma's relationship with Roland. But it also sounded like their relationship was casual, like they weren't engaged or anything. So, I don't know. No one's going to, at this point, find out all the details of that. Yeah, so Jewel didn't seem to have an issue with Roland and Thelma's relationship, but it did seem like she was threatened by Thelma. Oh no, she threatened Thelma when the restaurant was not performing well. So I looked into Jewel Carmen for one reason, just to see if that was her real name. And I found out, no, that was not her real name. Her real name was Florence Lavina Quick. And she was also an aspiring actress. Her parents, actually, at the time of Thelma's death, in another weird note, were living one block away from the restaurant. So that's interesting. So Carmen's last film was in 1926, called The Bat, which was directed by her husband at the time, Roland West. It sounds like he directed a few of her films. As I was reading this, it kind of made me wonder if perhaps Jewel Carmen was threatened or uncomfortable by Thelma's relationship with Roland, in addition to Thelma's rising success as like a budding actress film star. For whatever reason, Jewel Carmen didn't really get that big, and she also retired perhaps early, shortly after Thelma died, which seems slightly suspicious as well. If you, like, go to the trouble of changing your name to Jill Carmen, why would you retire early? So, also, Thelma Todd was linked to infamous mobster Lucky Luciano, and apparently they had a tumultuous relationship. He allegedly beat Thelma and then got her hooked on amphetamines. He may have also wanted to open a casino in Thelma's restaurant, but Thelma did not like the idea of allowing mobsters into her business affairs. Keep in mind that she was in her 20s during all this, so I was like, wow, she's pretty, I feel like she seems business savvy in a way for being that young and being very popular in films and things. So this is not proven, but she reportedly said to him once, quote, over my dead body, and he responded with, quote, that can be arranged. But keep in mind that this was literally in Hollywood and rumors were going around at a rapid pace, especially when it was related to a rising star who was murdered mysteriously. So those quotes might not even be real. Another theory is that Thelma's ex-husband, Pat DeSico, may have wanted revenge after feeling humiliated by their divorce. The male ego is a fragile thing and can do scary things. Some people were suspicious of Thelma's mother. Apparently she kind of gave momager vibes. And shortly before Thelma died, her mother announced her desire to build a mansion, but did not explain where she would have the funds necessary to build the mansion. Despite numerous potential motives for wanting Thelma Todd dead, a grand jury ruled her death a suicide. Even overlooking the shady cast of characters, another detail about Thelma's death that has been left unanswered, which was raised by the Chicago Tribune, if she had really died of carbon monoxide poisoning, then how did she end up with these other physical injuries? Quote, while a grand jury ruled that Todd committed suicide, it was unable to explain her broken nose, bruises she had around her throat, and two cracked ribs. Apparently, the grand jury thought Todd also beat herself to death. Perhaps part of the reason why this case has remained a topic of conversation is the premise sounds like it could have been a movie literally made at that time. It sounds like people who were involved are not alive anymore. But, I mean, there's always a chance that maybe something could come to light. Someone who knew someone or a relative that told a relative something and they're holding on to it. I don't know. There's always a chance that more details might emerge. But, yeah, that's all that's available for now. So it still remains unsolved in a mysterious murder. So that is a mysterious death of Thelma Todd.
Yeah, I don't think it's a suicide. If she had bruises and, you know, you said broken or cracked ribs, and I don't think it's a suicide.
And the fact that everyone around her seems super suspicious.
Yeah, that, I mean, I guess like old, because this was what,
1935,
okay. Yeah. I mean, also, too, you have to think of, like, the Great Depression. They were just going through that, too. So, like, maybe that had something to do with it. And maybe it was the ex-husband who wasn't too thrilled. Or, I mean, maybe it was the mom. If they had life insurance policies back then, I don't know if they did.
I kind of got mob vibes when it's, like, they kind of made it seem like someone that had to pose her like that. Like, they would have known how to stage a death potentially, but
and known like when someone was around to like find her, like if they knew her schedule or like her maid's schedule. So yeah, I don't know, it could have been, I mean, they could have hired like a hitman too. Maybe it was a, you know, the husband and the mom working together.
Also, the, I guess I didn't include it, another kind of odd detail to go against Jill Carmen. She apparently had said initially that she saw Thelma Todd, like, walking around at a time where she definitely would have been dead. And so that seems weird. Like, why would she lie about seeing her if she was already... So, yeah.
Alibi? I don't know. But also, like, so many actresses changed their names back then. Like, Marilyn Monroe. I'm pretty sure her like, legal name was, like, Norma Jean. So, like, it was, that was fairly common.
Also, the fact that she, like, retired right after this happened and then basically lived in obscurity, I'm like, but she died, so.
But if a lot of people, like, connected her, maybe they thought that, like, she had something to do with it or she knew something, so it was, like,
the equivalent. Yeah, I mean, there could have been other reasons. But it's just, like, that looks so suspicious, though.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, I'm a part of a potential murder. Bye.
Like, all of this, it's all weird.
You know.
And we'll probably never know because everybody involved is dead.
You know, unless, like, for some reason, maybe a descendant of someone who knew something. I don't, yeah. It's pretty, probably a pretty slim chance of something getting uncovered.
Or maybe it was, you know, maybe she got beat up the day before and I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I could have been anybody. I don't know.
But yeah, I just, like, had all the classic traits for a detective movie, like mobsters, like popular starlet, like this cafe where apparently all types of characters went to, like money issues, I don't know, potential weird love triangle thing maybe, like there's so many details,
It had everything.
So. Jilted ex-husband, potentially.
Everything. Yeah, because it could, honestly, it's like, it could be anybody.
I know, it's like a whodunit. Literally. But, and then the fact that, like, Lucky Luciano is, like, a pretty big name for mobsters. He just somehow gets tied into this. Like, people don't really know that mobsters were associated with old Hollywood. Like, it was a thing.
They were. There was a lot of darkness in old Hollywood. I feel like that we're just kind of starting to learn and understand and like, oh, that happened.
Like, so many deaths were covered up. Like, it's crazy. And like how I mentioned in the beginning, like, oh, just like the more innocent, like people change their names or film studio execs made people change their backstories. But then there's also like, I can't think of who on the top of my head right now, but I know someone like her mom, actually, I think this also may have been Marilyn Monroe. Her mom had, like, psychiatric, like, mental health issues. So, like, film studio execs basically, like, put them away in some kind of, like, asylum or something like that. I think they actually paid for it, but basically it's, like, you're not allowed to talk about it. Like, it's, like a bad secret, and then basically would hide them, like...
Oh, yeah, like, they all... They controlled everything. They would give them, like, Judy Garland. They would give her, you know, uppers to keep her energy up and down.
Yeah, I know. She's a... I thought about doing her for a story because, like, Judy Garland has... is, like, kind of considered almost the worst, I think, to have been, like, mistreated.
Yeah, she was treated horribly. And it was all controlled by, at the time, I think, mostly MGM Studios, I think, because she was contracted with them. Because it's not like today where you go for an audition and it's like, oh, I just worked for, you know... HBO last week and this week I'm auditioning for like a Disney movie. Like back then, like if you worked for MGM, you were
They basically owned you. Like
you worked with them, you did not work with any other studio, and they would trade you occasionally, but most of the time it was like, no, you can't. You're not going for that role because it's not under your contract.
I know, it's intense. So. That's why it's like people who are really that famous. It's like part of it was talent and skill, but part of it was also that like crazy amount of ambition to be able to get that popular, because they probably had to do some shady things to get there to that level. So
well, it's like that, and it's like you said in the beginning where they were just cranking out film after film after film, and it's like, when did they have time to like breathe in between? They didn't,
right?
Because they were always working. It's crazy.
And a lot of big actresses were marrying like high up film execs as well, so for maybe multiple reasons. But yeah, I know, it's just like fascinating. Yep. Like There is a show by Ryan Murphy that came out a few years ago that I recommend if people are interested in watching like old classic Hollywood. It was on Netflix last time I checked. It's literally called Hollywood. And it's like about a group of friends who are like trying to break into Hollywood, like acting, writing, producing, or directing, I think, like a combination. And it shows like kind of like the like less fabulous parts of Hollywood that we were basically talking about. So thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Oi with the Terror. We now release episodes on a bi-weekly basis. Follow and like our posts on Facebook and on Instagram, Oi with the Terror podcast. If you have any suggestions or questions or anything, email us at oiwiththeterroralready@gmail.com. And you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we'll see you all next time.
Bye.